Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. Thanks for joining us. Man, we've got a great show. It's the end of the year. And as always, I am joined by my good friend and colleague, Tony DiPreto. Tony, how are things in South Korea, and what have you been watching on the television and in the theaters?
South Korea is okay. We're kind of wrapping stuff up here. You know, obviously, I went to watch Endgame, and my life's now complete. I can leave South Korea and relocate back to America. It was awesome. I liked it a lot. I'm going to watch it again. I'm not going to throw in any spoilers for people who are busy and haven't seen it. But yeah, it was one of the kind of best movies I've seen in a while. And it was just planned really well. They did the stories well. They included a little bit of everything. And that's good because it's kind of like a culmination for fans. And all these fans have different people that they like. So they just brought everybody in and it was funny. And I would say for people who aren't maybe into action movies, this is a good movie for you. It's only about 30% action.
Oh, wow.
The rest of it is a story and like science.
Oh, well, I like that. I like both. I like my action too, but
there was actually a couple scenes where you're like waiting for action to break out and it doesn't happen. And when you reflect on it, it's like, oh yeah, it couldn't. Like they've got to go do this and they don't really have time to fight people. So
very cool. Very cool.
TV, Game of Thrones. It's what I call my weekly letdown.
And man, you
know, there's a lot of people hating on it for really stupid reasons. But I'm just like, could you have not taken a little time to one, make a plan? Because it doesn't seem like anybody made a plan. And two, there's all these huge battle scenes, and had anyone who was working on this movie watched any battle scene in any movie, it would have been better. It's like, this is ridiculous. Like, come on. It's almost like they're just trying to kill people off to reduce their payroll. That is my theory right now.
Man,
just get rid of
I don't have HBO, so my mom has HBO, and usually when I visit her, she's a big Game of Thrones fan. I watch it with her. And I was going to get HBO, like do the trial, you know, HBO trial after all the episodes had gone. And that way I could just kind of power through them because I think the trial is for 2 weeks and then just cancel. But now I don't know. Maybe I won't do that. Maybe I'll just wait until I go to my mom's house and watch it with her. I don't know. Yep. But Game of Thrones, I mean, not Game of Thrones, but Endgame, I haven't seen, but I really want to see, really want to see it. I saw Shazam. How about that?
Oh, how was that?
Well, I saw it on the opening weekend of Endgame, thinking everybody's going to go see Endgame. Nobody's going to go see Shazam.
But
that was a bad move because everybody wanted to go see Endgame, but Endgame was sold out. And so they bought tickets to Shazam. So this theater was almost sold out for Shazam. But it was good. It was fun. It was really good. It wasn't like the dark, brooding DCs. You know, it's what everybody said it was. Zach Levi makes a really good Shazam. He's a lot of fun to watch, and it's good. It's good. It's very entertaining through and through, start to end. It's good. It's a good movie. So, a good Netflix movie, you know? Good Netflix movie. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we have got some great things. We're going to talk about the projector search that we're doing at my school. We're going to talk about Tony has some news about Python. But first, the big news I think that hit last week, actually the week before, was Apple killing 11 of the top 13 parent control apps in the iOS App Store. Just took them out of the store, thus severely damaging those companies' business. And I'm a little torn here. But the reason why they said they did it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, was that these companies were using an MDM profile that was going onto the Apple device. And
correct.
MDM stands for Mobile Device Management. And we both use it at our schools. I use one. And there's a lot, quite a few of them out there, but it really kind of gives you absolute, complete control over that device. And Apple, in their terms of service, said that they can't use this for a consumer product, which is what these are. And so they said they gave them 30-day notice, told them why, and said that they need to change in 30 days, or it's going, or they're going to pull the app. And that's a lot for them to change. And so the apps were pulled, and those companies are really, really upset. The New York Times wrote an article by Jake Nakas. I don't know how to say his name there. And it is definitely slanted against Apple. And but I don't know if you go to Mac Rumors. Mac Rumors is very much slanted towards Apple and saying that this is a very good move by Apple because it opens up a whole lot of privacy concerns where these MDM companies can actually go in and see everything that's happening on that device. Thus, it's a privacy concern. So, Tony, you've done a little bit of research in here. What do you think about this?
All right. So here's the thing. If you, and I know this from, you know, painful iPad experience, if you live in a country that does not have the device enrollment program, you're in this gray area where MDM providers are basically kind of allowed to operate in the App Store because there's no device enrollment. So meaning the option isn't there for you. So what happens is you're kind of like, instead of a school or a company, you're more like a consumer, like these parents are, and you're managing your equipment with these apps that technically are illegal, but they're legal because there's no device enrollment program. Once the device enrollment program comes into the country, then this same thing starts to happen. And so I started thinking about it a little bit more, and it seems like there's a few things going on. One, what is device enrollment? Okay, so if you read the details of what you're not allowed to do, it says that basically if you're not a company, if you're not purchasing through a device enrollment program through in bulk or at least through some type of licensed vendor, that you're not allowed to use your device with one of these MDM providers. That means if a parent goes and just buys it from the Apple Store, if they wanted to use MDM, they would actually have to purchase it through one of the enterprise providers. They would have to go with Meraki or Jamf or one of these people.
Yeah.
They actually have to pay for this service.
Yeah, pay for the licensing fee to put for the certificate or the profile whatever it is.
So if you're purchasing as like a company or a school, you can actually use MDM, but if you're just a home consumer, you can't. So I was starting to think about I was trying to think about this both ways. First off, since all these schools have all this equipment, where's the privacy issue there? They're letting MDM providers, wreck privacy any way they want.
Yeah.
Basically, you're giving the companies and the schools the ability to spy on what people are doing.
Yep.
And what's the argument that the school owns the equipment? That doesn't necessarily mean that the school can see what the kids are doing. We have to write policies and procedures for all of that. I believe there was a case a few years ago, right? Was it in Pennsylvania? Where schools were spying on kids at home and they got in trouble?
Yeah. They were turning on I remember this one because they were one-to-one. The kids had, I believe, MacBooks. And using an MDM, they were able to turn on and view through the webcam. And kids were at home, right. And all of a sudden, if you know Macs, there's a little green light up there by the webcam, and the green light would come on. And they'd be like, why is that green light coming on? So, yeah.
So it seems like Apple regulated that, forced MDM providers and equipment management people who sell stuff to schools to fix that so that that was more in control of the school and it wasn't leaking out to third parties. So it seems like they definitely can. It seems like they definitely could fix that for these consumer apps, like just for people, so that they're safer. And it's also weird because these are parent control apps. That means the device is going to a child.
Yeah,
like that's what it seems like most of them are for. So first off, like these kids technically probably aren't even old enough to use a lot of social media and a lot of other services. Hmm. So I don't understand why the parents by right shouldn't have the ability to see everything that the kids are doing, because they're enabling the student, the students, the child, by buying them the device. So the parent, here's the thing, the parent actually owns the device. They're giving it to the kid. Why can't the parent have software to manage everything? Because they own it.
They do. I think Apple's argument is that they don't have an issue with the parent seeing this or controlling this or turning off the App Store or whatever, like getting rid of, like refusing, not allowing YouTube to install. Or I think their problem is that they're saying that these third-party services like MobiSip and Custodio and all these other really popular ones, they also get to see that information. Mm. And I think they're calling it a breach of privacy for the, and they're trying to protect the consumer. At least that's the argument.
That's their argument. But I was reading some of the developers, and the developers said, we're happy to not, but just give us access to the API so we know how to do it.
Yeah.
So their argument was that this stuff isn't documented enough so that they can make those changes. And I'm saying it's definitely documented enough on the enterprise end, because it's either documented on the enterprise end or they're not enforcing it. So which one is it? It just seems unbalanced. Like, is Cisco, like, I'm using Cisco Meraki on these iPads for children who are like grade 2 and below. Is Cisco Meraki able to, like, on their end, turn on the device and like monitor the kids? Like, it's not supposed to be able to.
It's, but they certainly would have that option if they wanted to, because it's that's a cloud-based service too, so they could do it anywhere in the world, that device anywhere in the world they could.
I guess my point is, if Apple's concerns are valid, then they're valid for everybody using MDM, even the authorized ones.
Interesting.
And if these developers actually don't have access to the API to be able to restrict it, then that means none of the developers have access to restrict it, which means it's a problem for everybody.
And a lot of people are crying foul here. Well, a lot of the companies are crying foul, and New York Times and some other people as well, are, because Apple, it built into all iOS devices now is something called their screen time, which will allow a parent to pick up the device and say, okay, at this time, this app can't be used, or the internet has to be shut off, or they could just program it right onto the device and get reports from it. And it's kind of like a watered down version of some of these other apps. And they're saying, well, now Apple has its own product. They want people to use it. So they're shutting us out.
There's a couple other things too that are interesting. First off, if Apple's product's better, they should just advertise it. Because any parent that can have it for free will stop paying for the service.
I've seen the product work. I don't know if you've used it or played around with it, but I've helped a couple parents set it up, and it works pretty well. And because it's on the device too, so it's not on a particular network or anything like that. So it doesn't matter where they are.
Here's my conspiracy theory. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
In order for third-party MDMs to work, there's one thing that you have to do, at least to iPads and iPhones. I don't know about laptops. You have to disable the built-in Apple feature, Find My Phone. The location tracking data that goes to Apple has to be disconnected, because all of these MDM products have location requirements, and it causes a conflict. So you have to turn off Apple getting data that says Find My Phone. So the only thing I can think of is Apple really wants the data that's coming from the Find My Phone. And I don't know, Find My Phone should just be sending geolocation data, but maybe it's sending other data. And maybe they're like, no, we need this data for X, Y, and Z. And whenever these MDMs are installed, it gets disabled. Parents have to usually disable it manually. They have to go in and turn it off. But that's the only thing I can think of, that when these MDMs go on, Apple's getting disconnected from part of their data stream, and for some reason they feel like they need it.
That's interesting.
So Cisco Meraki has its own data mapping system, So you enable location services. So those are still on. So I guess that data is going to Apple, but you still turn off Find My Phone.
Hmm.
And then Cisco Meraki will immediately stop working. But maybe they've made a deal where they're sending that data back to Apple.
I don't know. I would think that they would have to share whatever. If they want to be an authorized MDM provider, they would have to share whatever. Apple has all the leverage here. So I would imagine that.
I just feel like Apple should just come strong with their product and say, hey, it's included, it's free. Do that for a year, and then these people just go out of business. That just seems like a normal way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. These other companies, I mean, this works. Their product works on Chromebooks, on laptops, on Android devices. Heck, I think one of them you can even put on gaming consoles, too. So this isn't their only. It's a major part of the revenue stream, because if you buy a tablet, you're not buying an Android tablet. You're buying an iPad. And if you're most kids, I think the data came out, I think in America, like 80% of all teenagers who have smartphones have an iPhone of some sort. Because I guess it's a status symbol. I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting, and it's just another. You know, it's just another chip. Apple just. It just seems like they're stumbling and they've been stumbling all for a number of years now, and I think people are just getting really tired with them, and they're getting beat up in the education market, and I don't know, I'm curious to see how this goes and how they handle it. Their privacy is definitely super important to them right now, and. And they're doing everything they can to convince people of that. So,
well, I think in some ways they're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So, I think it's just a matter of time before we get so many lawsuits coming out against like Facebook and some other social media platforms for this stuff that they're going to have to really make a big change or just really start cutting full divisions of their employment like out.
Yeah.
Starting to liquidate, their human resource expenses, because they're not going to be able to constantly afford the cash flow. It's not about how much they're valued at. It's about how much money they have to pay out lawsuits. And then the other thing is, I think Apple wants to be like the gold standard for like data privacy. And I think they're just going to keep maintaining that like concept. However, internally, I still am concerned about why they need, what they're going to do with the data and, what it really means for their, like, internal corporate strategy.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly think that they're going to go from consumer electronics to consumer health and consumer health insurance. Mm. I think that's where they're going. And they're like, look, you can get life insurance so much cheaper if you wear an Apple Watch, because and you can trust your data with us, that we're not going to just sell it to any person. We're only going to share it with your insurance provider.
Yep.
But
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. If they wanted to get into that, they're going to have to really tighten the reins.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, you mentioned light at the end of the tunnel. Well, so okay, I'm stretching for this segue here. But speaking of light, we're trying to light up the classrooms with projectors, Tony. We're trying to light them all up. In our school, your school is fairly new. So you guys are probably, with smart boards and projectors, you guys are pretty standardized campus-wise.
We don't really have any, just so everybody knows, in the classrooms, there's no interactive boards. Nobody wanted them.
Yeah, they're just projectors then, right?
Yeah, we have these Epson interactive projectors, but again, there's zero demand.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to reiterate that. New campus. Zero demand. Okay. Like 600 students. Zero demand. Just going to keep saying it over and over.
Yes. So we are looking at brand new projectors, and we have also been pitched on interactive flat panels or interactive TVs, basically 75-inch tablets thrown up on the wall. We've been pitched short throw projectors, regular projectors, which kind of sit in the middle of the room and project onto a screen, as a short throw usually sits very close to the screen. Bulbed projectors and laser projectors. And Tony, we're going to be making our decision next week, but I have a feeling I know what we're going to go with. I think we're going to go with a standard throw projector that is a laser projector. So there is no bulb to change at all. They turn on they're on full brightness at 8 seconds. They turn off instantly with no loud fan thing afterwards. And if you want to turn it right back on immediately, you can. And they are supposed to last about 20,000 hours before they die.
So we have a mutual friend who sells a lot of big AV equipment to a lot of big people, including his company, supplies all the projectors for the state of Florida public schools. Mm. And he told me the same thing. He said that there's no question. You get your best bang for your buck out of laser, and you don't really have to service them.
Yeah, yeah. What we found with the bulbed ones, and I've done a bit of research here, and it doesn't matter what type of bulb you have because there are different types of technology with the bulbs. It's a bulb. It's a light bulb. It will fade eventually. It will start to dim. And you're in one bulb, and you can have two bulbs sitting right next to each other in boxes. Take them out, install them at the exact same time, but one bulb might die a year and a half earlier than another bulb. And there's no rhyme or reason here. You just don't know. You're always gambling a little bit. But with the laser, it's gonna work. It's just gonna work. And the cost of laser projectors, I've found, have become surprisingly competitive. There is a bit of cost up front, though.
So I did this model for this school that I'm at now. They actually wouldn't listen to me, actually. So I don't. It is cheaper, actually, to own laser projectors.
Yes.
So you've got to, okay, first off, you have to ask yourself, how long is your non-laser projector going to last, considering that no one turns them off? Even if you have it set to shut itself off, people still turn it on and leave it on at random times.
They do.
How long is it going to take you before bulb replacement? Are you going to get 5 years? No. You're going to get like 2, maybe 3 years. So that means in 7 years you're going to do 2 bulb replacements, and that's just the bulb. The engine can actually go out on these things, and you have to change those. So I would say in 7 years on a normal projector, you're going to have 3 major repairs. If you take those 3 repairs and add it into the original cost of the projector, what you get is more than a laser projector.
Yeah, yeah. I had one person quote me non-laser projectors and with DLP bulbs, and he goes, "These DLP bulbs, they don't fade. And you're gonna get 3,500 hours of them, full brightness. They just don't fade. And then when they do fade, they fade really quickly, and you know you have to change them." So, and I said, "Well, how much are the bulbs?" And he goes, "I don't have the number offhand." So I went and looked it up on CDW and SHI. Which are technology, you know what they are. They're technology. You can find just about any sort of technology you want to buy from them. And they usually will sell it like in bulk too if you want to, or an individual play, or individually. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the bulbs were $200. They were $200 for the bulbs.
Not bad.
$200. So even if it lasted the same length as a laser projector, and we didn't have any repairs or anything, we just had to change the bulb, we're still paying more money for that projector than we are with a laser projector. It's just a laser we have to pay more upfront in order to get it. The lasers we're looking at are anywhere from $1,000 to $1,400 per projector, which is a little pricey. And the bulb projector is around $400 to $500 per projector. But it's good. And we did some math. If our teachers turn on a projector at 8 a.m. and turn it off at 4 p.m., they just leave it on the entire day, 365 days a year, Monday through Monday, the projector should last almost 8 years before it hits the 20,000-hour mark.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. And the projector in room 1 is going to be just as bright as the projector in room 35. Because they don't dim. They just don't dim. Yeah.
That's the other thing. Even if they're working, you have dimming. Just last week. So we're only on year. We're not even 2 years in, and we still have some that are dimming. They're starting to dim.
Yeah. So it's the big question for us was, should we do short throw or standard? And we're going to go with the standard mount just because it sits in the middle of the classroom. If the room gets rearranged, all we have to do is literally rotate the projector. We don't have to unmount it and remount it and run a whole bunch of wires from one wall to another wall. We literally just kind of rotate. And that gives our teachers flexibility to rearrange the room. It makes things quicker for us when it comes in the summertime or even during the school year if they want to rearrange or need to rearrange for whatever reason. I think that's where we're going to go. We're going to be meeting we have a committee. We're going to be meeting later this week to make the final decision. But I think that's what it is. So people out there, if you're considering projectors, laser, I wouldn't consider anything other than laser.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're still, I think right now they're actually a better value than like big screens too. So make sure that you don't get swayed.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I had one guy try to sell us on that. And I was like, he goes, what does a whiteboard have that our interactive whiteboards don't have? And I said, they don't have power. I said, so when the power goes out, I said, they don't have power. They don't have updates. They don't have, they don't have circuitry failure. They always work no matter what, as long as you have a pin. And yeah, so anyhow, there you go. Projector search 2019, nearly finished.
And I only have one more quick topic, and then I think we can wrap it up.
All right, yeah. So Python creator quits? What?
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting story, and there's a video you can watch. But here's my main takeaway from the story. He says, and I'll just read a little quote. I did not enjoy it when core developers were sort of sending tweets where they were questioning my authority or the wisdom of my decisions, rather than saying it to my face or having an honest debate about things. So he really is. You know, he's kind of started, he basically created Python. This guy still is a core developer for Dropbox. I mean, he's a genius.
Yeah.
Okay. He's leading this community. He builds the code base. He gets the development teams set up. They're probably all working remotely around the world. And, you know, he's kind of a mentor and a guide, and he's making, basically at a certain point, there's a lot of people working on developing Python, and he's just making sure there are community standards and that the language is following the standard. Because if it doesn't follow a standard, and then it's not going to be useful anymore. And he's got all these people he's been working with for years, and then what happens is they start using social media to just send like little tweets, and what's happening is instead of having normal meetings and conversations and working through problems, they're just spewing like anger online. And he said he just got to a point where it was stressing him out and it was unhealthy, and he just doesn't need the additional stress. So he kind of steps down. So he's not really part of it anymore. And I just, you know, it seems like I'm hearing more and more things like this recently, and I'm seeing kids do it as well. And I guess my takeaway is that this isn't healthy behavior. Students should be able to like sit down and work on projects and like have a debate and come to some kind of at least team consensus and make a plan and move forward. And, you know, when you have people like this, I mean, this guy, I mean, if you don't know what Python is, you should see how big it's grown in the last few years. It is a lot of the stuff that you're using every day is built on Python. And if the community doesn't have a leader and the standards don't hold, it'll fall apart, you know, and a lot of things that you use every day will have to be rebuilt, basically, like literally rebuilt, because they rely on the Python code to work. And for his community to think that this is one acceptable way to like work through problems. And then two, to completely disrespect the person who invented it and say, oh, he's not important. We could do it all. Like, that's just it's just a red flag to me. And I'm seeing this more and more with social media. I see students who use social media seem to be the, like, heavy users seem to be the most withdrawn. They're really difficult to have conversations with, and they take very little responsibility for their actions. That's what I'm seeing recently.
Oh.
And yeah, it's just starting to bother me. And you would, and I started thinking about Linus, right? The guy, Torvalds, who,
yeah,
he had a similar thing happen. You know, he's been the hub of the center of the Linux community for years, and he's maintained standards, and he's a tough person to work with. I would say that, you know, he's at Steve Jobs level when it comes to like beating people down for mistakes and stuff. But at the same time, do a search and see how many servers in the world run on Linux.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's a high pressure, mission critical environment for a lot of companies. So I feel like he's fairly justified in being a tough person to work with. But it was the same thing. He's kind of taking a step back too, because he started getting all this social media pressure, and just these people, they really care about what they're doing. Like, this guy is really passionate about Python. He put his whole life into it, and he just can't stand the hateful language and the rhetoric. It's just, it's literally driving him crazy, right? So he has to take a step back. And I don't like seeing these communities fall apart like this. And people are like, oh, it's not falling apart, it's evolving. Maybe, but, you know, he did say that he had delegated a lot of his tasks, but I don't know if it's that easy to delegate your leadership.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think turning something over like that would be very difficult. And even if you have people who are like, oh, you're excellent on the code base, or you're excellent on running protocols or whatever, it's getting all those people to work together. He was kind of the nexus and the hub that made all that, to make all that go. And Python is in a great position right now, I would say. I would say if a lot of schools are looking to use Python as to teach coding for computer science. I mean, there's a lot of choices out there, but Python is such a hot topic right now that you can find tons and tons and tons of videos just on YouTube. I've looked around and I found three videos that totaled, Tony, get this, that totaled almost 25 hours. Three videos.
So keep in mind that, you know, to inspire people to not just develop something and use it, but to also contribute back into the community, that is that takes a lot. And you got to be the type of person who models that behavior. And I just think people underestimate what it takes to start projects like this and lead them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and social media, you know, just pounding and pounding and pounding on this guy.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, I'm done. Like, whatever. I'll just go do something else, because he can. See, this is the thing. He could actually start something new. Everyone else is going to be stuck in the Python little development bubble. They didn't invent anything. They just kind of inherited it. So if it falls apart, what do they have? You know, the next thing he invents, are they going to jump into that? Hey, remember when we worked together and I tweeted that you were horrible?
Hey, how's that Dropbox API coming? Can I get my hands on that yet?
Yeah, exactly.
So
anyway, that's all I've got.
Nice. That's all I've got too. That's it. That's a nice, brisk episode, folks. Clocking in just over 30 minutes. That's good. That's how we like it, though, on the IT Babble. We like to try to keep it short and sweet sometimes. So anyway, I guess for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.